Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I'm Janine Vosper, and today I am not your host. I'm going to switch it round a little bit, and I am going to be interviewed by a very good friend of mine. Her name's Barbara Clifford, and she is the Time Tamer. If you've listened to the previous episodes, you would have heard one from done with Barbara when she gave a lot of expert information on how to de-stress and manage time. But we've switched it up a little bit today, and Barbara is going to be interviewing me. So I'm going to hand everything over now to Barbara Clifford. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Thanks for giving me this opportunity.
You're most welcome. It's quite fun. This is the second one that I've been the interviewee, and every 20 episodes or so, I think it's worthwhile for me to sort of share my expertise as well. So I'm looking forward to this part of it. It's quite different than asking the questions. And I just want to warn people, I'm in Brisbane and it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And if anyone lives in Brisbane, they know what happens between 2 and 3 every afternoon in summer. And the clouds are building up. So if we hear some thunder and lightning in the background at some stage, we'll know what it is. So, and I'm going to stop talking now as the host, and I'm going to hand everything over to Barbara. Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks, Janine. And it's such a privilege to be sitting in this seat. It's like you've been allowed the opportunity to sit in the throne because, you give so much to all of these amazing women, and we all enjoy not only the opportunity to speak with you, but to hear other people's voices. So it's just so nice for us to be able to get to know you a little better and hear about your expertise. So on that note, I'm going to read your bio. So for the listeners that may not have heard this about you before, they get a feel for who you are and get to know a bit of your background. So during her extensive career, Janine Vosper has worked with hundreds of small business owners in assisting them to have the confidence and know how to create presentations that guarantee to wow audiences. Having presented workshops on topics of her expertise in many countries around the world, Janine won the title of Australian Champion, going on to represent her country at the Power Talk International Speaking Contest in Hawaii in 2013. From Alaska to Japan, New Zealand to Hawaii and around Australia, audiences have described Janine's presentations as brilliant, powerful, and informative. Her real passion is to empower women, to provide them with a confident voice and the words to enable them to speak their message with credibility and conviction. A voice so they are able to confidently sell their ideas and to have the know-how to speak with influence in front of any audience. As well as a speaker's coach, Janine has over 20 years' experience coaching business owners and solopreneurs in authentic selling techniques, achieving outstanding results. The number of key areas she trains in embody the principles of the Speak Method program, which Janine developed and is delivered as keynote presentations, seminars, and workshops. Wow.
When you put it all like. It sounds impressive, doesn't it, when it's read by
somebody? What do you mean almost sounded? It is impressive. That is unbelievable. So I want to kick this off by asking you about your beliefs. What is it that holds truth for you in all of this?
You know, one of the things that I've found is particularly working with the women entrepreneurs over the more recent years, in working with women who are solopreneurs and working by themselves, is that they don't actually recognize the power that they have within them and the power they have within story. And most people have got to where they are as a bit of a journey. That they, we just don't turn up there one day and go, wow, I've got all this experience and knowledge. And for some people, the journeys can be pretty traumatic. And for others, they're just, you know, a plod along and everyone gets there and they don't realize that there is a story within that, and how you then can monetize that story or use it and put it together so that you're building a great pitch or an idea or something that represents who you are and identifies who you are just by telling a story rather than trying to, you know, push a sale or anything from that. It's not you. You know, we don't, a lot of us women do not recognize that we are important, that we're powerful, that we can influence. And by telling a story is, and doing it well, is probably one of the best methods. So that's what I believe, that we have that in us and that we need to be able to share that with people as well and have the confidence to share it.
And I think too, you've touched on something that's really important. Everybody loves a story. Innately, that's who we are, is we're storytellers. It's embedded into community and culture. But I think too often women feel that their story, oh, it's my story is not special. My story is not important. So part of what you're talking about too is the confidence to go, yes, there is value in what I have to say, that there is someone who wants to hear my story and there's value in it, and that unfolds to greater opportunity.
Absolutely. And it builds connection, and people remember stories as opposed to, you know, techniques or ideas. We'll remember somebody's story. And as I said, that, you know, I was one of those people that often thought, you know, I haven't got this big story. I haven't gone through any major trials or tribulations, and I've just ended up where I've ended up. But when you start breaking it down, and particularly when I wrote my book, you really start breaking it down and you go, it doesn't sound that much, but it's common to people, that most people fortunately don't have anything horrific in their lives, and they just get to where they are without anything major happening. So what I found is that my story actually connected to a lot of people, because it was everyday anecdotes and information that sort of identified me as who I was.
And even though you're an everyday person, but there's so many of us that are an everyday person, so when you tell your story, people go, she's just like me. I've got a story that's really similar. And because it's similar, it's interesting and engaging.
Yeah. And it identifies with people. Yeah. I know that when I, you know, one of the reasons I first got into public speaking, I'd been teaching aerobics for about 10 years. Now, you've got to have a fair bit of confidence to be able to, you know, run around a room at 100 and talk at 150 beats a minute and stay ahead of the beat and keep motivating people. And I used to do a crazy amount of classes a week. And so I was in front of people, had confidence, but it's very different than doing public speaking. When I got into GM role, I would be doing pitches to, you know, the big boys at the top end of town, and I'd deliver that. And again, that was a skill that was learnt, but it was still different than speaking in public. And my dearest and oldest friend, I grew up next door to her, and her mum was so close that I called her auntie. And when her mum passed away, her dad had passed away just a month before. Her dad was expected, her mum wasn't. And at the funeral, nobody could speak on her behalf. This lady was amazing. She was so supportive of everything in her community. She'd worked and helped at that church for about 30 years. And the pastor had just changed, so the new pastor didn't know her at all. The family was so distraught. And some had spoken at her husband's funeral, but then they couldn't speak at her funeral. And I sat in the pews, and there's so much I wanted to say, Barbara. There were words that I just wanted to be able to share about that amazing woman. But I couldn't. I just couldn't. I did not have the confidence. Even though everything I'd been doing, I did not have the confidence to get up and speak on her behalf in front of a room full of strangers. And I was devastated within myself. I felt so bad that I couldn't honor this woman. And I sat there that day and said, I am never going to be without a voice again to speak, to move people. And since then I've actually emceed at a couple of life celebrations, and I've spoken at other funerals, and people have come up to me and said, I'm so glad you said exactly what I wanted to say, but you've said it well and you've clarified it. And it made me know that I could, what you were saying was how I felt about that person too. So I just wasn't going to get caught out again. And that's why I got good at public speaking and took those steps.
Do you know what's really important about that story for me is that when I see you speak and I hear you talk about speaking and the knowledge and the expertise that you share, that's you've shared with us that journey. It's hard to believe that you were that person that was stuck for words and didn't know what to say. The Janine that I know now, who's a confident speaker and can put together a concise story and can sell ideas, it's amazing to hear that story. We often talk about the why in business, and so that in itself is a great example of communicating your story and your why in terms of what you've just shared with us in that experience. So it's a great example. It's a great testimony to what you do.
Yeah, thank you. It was a powerful moment for me at that time. Yeah.
So moving on from there, can I ask you this question? So what do you think are the main problems or issues that women face? What are the biggest mistakes that speakers make?
One of the things in particular, and I've touched on that a little bit, is that women miss the opportunity to promote themselves. There's a few reasons for that. One is they just don't have the confidence to do so. So they'll tend to sit back and allow others to take the limelight. And another reason is that we don't want to be seen as a tall poppy that someone's going to knock down as well. We don't want to show that we're, ego or have to be the center of attention. And that's all beliefs and value systems that we've been brought up with, that particular model. But there's so many women that just miss that chance to. And we're given chances, especially there's so many opportunities where I see people have women have expertise in a topic, but they just don't share it. And again, as you said before, if you can speak about it, then you can be identified as an expert on a topic. But if you keep your mouth shut, unfortunately, people don't know.
Do you think too that there's fear of communicating their ideas, that their ideas aren't valid or not worthy enough, or that they might be seen as being overconfident or aggressive?
Do you think? Absolutely. And I like that point about their ideas, it might not be of value. What we don't realize is that what we can do easily, others can't. It took me years to figure that out, that there's certain things that I can do really easily. I'm super organized and I'm fast and I just get things done easily. And I have this filing cabinet in my brain where I just put things in and I can pull it out when I need it. But I didn't know that other people couldn't do that. And so it used to build a frustration in me when they didn't do it, but it also was something that I didn't think was worth sharing. I didn't see value in that. But then when I started talking to people about it, going, oh my gosh, can you teach me how to do that? Because I can't do that. But they would have an amazing skill in something else. We don't realize that what we can do easily is a good chance that others can't.
Yes, I think that's such an important point, especially for your listeners, for those solo entrepreneurs, for women that are embarking on new ventures or in business for themselves, is that we too often, I think, take for granted that because things come easy to us, there's no value in it. And for other people, it's hard. Because we know something, we think there's no value in it. But for other people, it's the first time they're hearing it, so it's incredibly interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Just earlier today, I was putting together part of a training module, and one of it was on working on your strengths and weaknesses. And in it, I said, you know, there's things we're great at, there's things we're good at, there's things that we can get a pass on, but there's also things that we don't like and we need to get assistance with, that we're just not good at it because it doesn't match our value system. But again, the things that we're great at is, you know, I when I work with people, I get them to identify it. And that's how I often build up their presentation and their workshops, is to nut out those particular skills and identify what they, even though they don't perceive it of worth, that, you know, I can certainly identify it for them and find that lesson in there for their client and how they would put that together.
So what do you think some of the other mistakes are that speakers tend to make?
Well, the reverse of that, Barbara, is that a lot of speakers will speak at events. And I attend two or three speaking events each week. Sometimes I'm the speaker, and other times that I'm there just either as a business owner, you know, you get up, you do your 1 minute pitch, or I'm there listening to two other speakers. So I get to see a lot of other people deliver their message, whether it's a 1 minute, 20 minute, or, you know, an hour. And what those speakers I've noticed, especially the ones that have been doing it for a long time, they obviously don't get feedback on how they're doing, because they continue to, and I'll see some of these people repeating the same mistakes every time I see them speak, they're making those same errors over and over again. So they haven't, you don't want, I'm not a big believer in asking for an evaluation at the end of anything. I will clarify that now. It's not something that I do, but when I do deliver stuff, the couple of people that I will really highly respect in the audience, I ask them for feedback on how I've gone, whether the message has got across, how the delivery went, just so that I stay on top of my game. And that's what I see a lot of speakers don't do, is they don't get feedback from somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
That's a really good point. And I think in anything that we do professionally or business-wise, you do need to get the feedback. And the point you've made is make sure you're getting feedback from the people who are experts or have experience in that field. And that's a really, really valuable point. In looking through some of the when we've been talking before, one of the points that you made was that sometimes people don't know the difference between a seminar and a workshop. Can you elaborate on that for me, Janine?
That is something that I find a little frustrating, especially if I think I'm going to a workshop and then I'm lectured at for 3 hours. It really does say it in the name, but a lot of people I've seen present and speak and run training stuff will call something a workshop and then just lecture. Now, we all have different learning styles, and only a small percentage of the population actually learn by hearing. Others learn by visually seeing something, and others learn by taking notes kinesthetically or actually participating. That's why workshopping something has a lot more effect and a lot better results for people remembering, because they've participated in it. But speakers will call a seminar where they lecture at you for a workshop, and it's not. A workshop really needs to have high participation in the audience in what they're doing. And there's a whole lot of ways to do that. And, you know, it can be just with feedback, it can be with activities, it can be with group stuff, it can be individuals, it can be workbooks. There's a whole lot of ranges of things, but keeping variety and making a workshop, especially when you're running something for a day or 2 days, that certainly is important to make sure that it's a workshop and not a seminar. Universities, you know, they're a seminar, and you're expected to take notes and remember what the lecturer has said, but that's very different than a workshop. So that's something that I noticed that speakers get wrong. Something else that really I find disappointing for the speaker is that they haven't made a point. They've obviously got great information that they want to share, but I want to know what the point, what outcome I've got. What am I going to walk away with? I'll walk away with information, but how's it tied up with a bow and rounded out so that I know that I've gone away with an ability to do something, or even when they're telling a story or lecturing or something, that they get wandering off task, and we're fine as long as you're making a point. Actually, that's a really vital thing about the stories as well. So I've got to have a point to them. There's no use creating a story without having a point to it, because it's distracting in a presentation, in a seminar, if you haven't made a point, because it leaves people wondering and then they lose track of where you're up to, and you've sort of lost your audience a little bit as well.
As you're sharing this stuff with me, Janine, I'm cringing. I'm thinking about all of the workshops. I've got the air, inverted commas, next to my voice as I speak, and not making a point. And I've definitely learnt the hard way about those key things. And the thing is too, I guess people working with you, is that you've gone through all those mistakes already. So you're fast tracking the learning by people coming to you and not having to cringingly make those mistakes in their career.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's like anything else. That's why I know you have coaches and I have coaches as well, is because other people have other levels of expertise, and I don't want to waste time learning something that somebody else already knows. And especially if it's got anything to do with computers and software programs and things like that, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. But that's exactly right, is that value in being shown how to do something. And importantly, how you do that then is to develop a presentation, is have a plan. I often hear people who've had that expertise and actually do recognize it, and they say, I'm going to put together a workshop, and I'll ask them, so what's your plan? And that's what there is. There's total silence, because they haven't thought about how they can plan out the workshop in relation to what outcomes they want to achieve and how they're going to deliver it, in what particular order, so it keeps people's attention and the their clients, their audience, gets the value out of what they expect. So not having a plan is another thing as well. And I'm sure we've all been to those sort of workshops where it just becomes a bit of a ramble, and you walk out going, well, I've learned things today, but I'm not sure. There was something that was missing, and it's often their structure.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So that can be the hidden mistake, that because that comes into the whole thing that you're talking about as well, in terms of making a point. If you've got a plan, then the points are really clear. It's the end in mind, isn't it? You're working towards an end idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think too, the trap that we can fall into it as speakers, in terms of not making a point or not making a plan, is like what we talked about earlier. When it's simple in our minds, we think we've communicated an idea to people, but sometimes we need to reaffirm that idea, is to say, and so this is what we've learned, or this is what I've shared, reiterate that key message. Would that be true, do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And if you're doing, if I was doing a contest speech, you would put it as, tell them what you're going to tell them in your introduction, tell them through the body of the speech, and at the end, tell them what you've told them. But that goes across whether it's a 8-minute speech or an 8-day presentation. You're doing that all the time. And that's another, that just sort of thought about something, is another point that people make, trying to fit in too much information. Because we're learning something new at a presentation, so it's better to take it slower and reinforce ideas rather than giving away too much information and to trying to get too much across in a short period of time. And if you have that, as you said, the keep reinforcing ideas, you won't do that then, because you have structured it in a way that you know that you're not going to give too much in a short period of time.
It's a great point, Janine. I know that I'm guilty of that too, where I've crammed too much information into either a half day or a full day, and people are absolutely exhausted by the end of the day because the concentration that's required because of the amount of talking I've done, all these mistakes you've mentioned, too much talking, cramming too much in, lecturing, not workshopping. Yes, yeah, so they're incredibly valuable points that you've shared.
Yeah.
So can I ask you, one of the common fears that people have are nerves. You mentioned it earlier on, having to get up and speak at the funeral. What are the best tips for people to overcome the nerves when they're speaking in public?
The nerves hold so many people back, and you often hear that statement, fake it till you make it. Now, I'm not a fan of that. I because if you fake it, then you're not actually embodying it. You've still got to do it until you can feel comfortable with it, but faking it doesn't give you that immersion into the to where you are, you know, into being able to present. So being able to do it, just go and do it. It is one of the, it's so hard for some people. And I know what I felt like that day sitting on that pew. It was impossible. There was no way that I was going to get up and speak then. But it is, you have to do it. And every time you do it, you grow your confidence muscle. So that's probably one of the things. It's probably the last thing that I would normally, when I'd list things down, is that would be the last one. But it just popped in about that fake it till you make it. So just doing it and 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 just realizing that most of the times the audience is on your side. I'm yet to see an audience that is out to, you know, pull you down or unless you're a comedian on stage and you expect to be harassed. But most people are there to support you and encourage you. And, you know, you do the same thing when you're in the audience, when somebody's struggling with something. So everyone will be supportive. So recognize that the audience is on your side and they're not out to get you. But there's a few things that you can do. One of the things, particularly when you first get up to speak, is to really ground yourself and think about your posture, but just sort of put your feet so they have roots on the bottom of your shoes and they're grounding you down just to make you stable and you don't get fidgety and move around. But grounding yourself really helps. Taking a deep breath before you stand is much better than taking a deep breath once you stand up, because that's a really good tell that you are nervous when you take a deep breath. So I usually get people to take a deep breath as they're standing up. By the time they're stood up, they're feeling a lot more relaxed and comfortable. A dry mouth often occurs too when people are really nervous. And so thinking of something, say a lemon, if you think about a lemon, you try and have a dry mouth. You automatically your juices flow because you're trying to get rid of that acidic taste in your mouth. So that helps. And just, I mean, there's stupid things out, but they tell you to think of the audience is in the nude and stuff like that. I mean, that I would be totally distracted if I was going to speak in that situation,
especially if George Clooney's in the audience.
Well. Goodness me.
Sorry.
Fine. But there's, you know, just be, don't be tough on yourself. Just don't that's one of the things is I see this as people have this incredible expectation of themselves when to speak. And they haven't done it many times before, or they're not comfortable with it. And they expect to speak as well as, and you know, often they'll say it's a hard act to follow. But if you are nervous, just don't even acknowledge, don't share that you're nervous, because very, very rarely does anyone else notice anyone else is nervous, because most people are so concerned about themselves and what they've got to say that they don't even notice what's going on. with, if you've got to walk out to somewhere to speak, then walk with authority. And that's a great place to be able to build your confidence, is to stand straight and walk tall and walk with confidence as well. And probably the best thing is just smile. If you smile yourself, then you feel more confident, and you look more confident as well. And again, most of the time the audience will not recognize this. But, you know, so many people get nervous, and you're not alone is probably another good point as well.
So to remember that people are on your side, they're there for you.
Absolutely. And everything is just about practice.
That's a really important point, I think, because I know that a lot of people think that when they get up to speak, it has to be perfect the first time, but nothing we ever do the very first time is perfect. And the great point that you made, that it's action that cures the fear. It's only by doing it over and over and over, like riding a bike or roller skating or doing any of those things. You have to fall off, or you have to fall on your backside a few times. And yes, it's uncomfortable, but you just get better at it.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's a 5 P's to remember as well, which is prior planning prevents poor performance. So whether the planning is what you're going to say, or just even running through some of those things that I've just done, or again, you practice it and do it over and over. Practice in the mirror, or just just speaking out and standing in somewhere that you're not comfortable with, and it's not a usual place that you would do that as well. But that's just that prior planning prevents poor performance. It's really important too. If you know that you know your stuff, that also helps.
That's a great mantra. That's an easy one to remember. That's awesome. So obviously having a message and being clear about your message will help in those speaking situations. So how do you ensure that everyone in the audience actually receives your message?
Well, I touched on a little bit before by making sure that you have a variety of things happening. So even if it's a lecture or a seminar, that you have different things. So we're talking here not about just a one-minute delivery. You know, this is a 20-minute presentation somewhere where you get an opportunity to speak in front of a business group, or somebody's asked you to speak on your topic for 45 minutes. You want to make sure that you've got a bit of variety happening, because if you don't, then the different types of learners are going to miss out on, and that's how you won't build that connection with them. So for example, as I mentioned, there's people that are very, very visual, so they will want to know, they want to be able to see things. And if you do your PowerPoints well, or your visual or your videos or however you're doing it, then you will be able to build a connection with the visual people. And my PowerPoints, I very rarely even put words on them. Most of the time they've got just images or photos, and they're just prompts, and that's what a good PowerPoint should be. But that prompt then is when you're speaking, so the auditory people are obviously hearing what you're saying, but you're building that connection between the visual and also your words. You want, and the visuals will often write and take notes, and it's good to be able to identify in your audience who are the different learning groups, because that way you can be aware of who's doing what and how they need to learn. So a visual will usually take notes. They might have the coloured pens and the highlighters as well. That will definitely be a visual. A kinesthetic person likes to have touch and to feel things, so they'll often be taking notes as well, but it's more from a sense of feeling, writing down the words. But you do want something that you can even pass around, something so they can touch it, or something that they connect with a sense of touch or feeling, or even telling a story. Like I told the story about before, that can build that sense of touch and feeling. That may be enough as well. And there are people that are auditory digital that will want to understand the technical part of how something works as well. Using language that connects with each one of those, that takes a whole different skill level to do that. But it's, if you're going to be presenting all the time, it's really important to know how to use words, language, and how to deliver your message. So each one of those people in your audience who have got a primary learning style that they prefer will be able to take your message away and enjoy the presentation as well. And then there's a whole another way of learning, which is called the format learning style. And a lot of the really good teachers around use this particular style. There's people in the audience that want to know straight up why they're there. So you're giving them the why and the reason for them being there right up front. There are also people who know what are you going to learn. So if you've got your day structured out or your session structured out, we're going to cover this, this, and this, you keep them happy as well. So just knowing these types of factors, that how you can address those factors in a presentation is really important. And also there are people that are the what ifs. I'm sure every person listening has ever been to a lecture, has had the what ifs in the room. Okay, all right, so let me just ask this question. What if, and what if, and some people, I'm a what if. I do it in my head, but there's others that need time to ask questions. They just won't get it unless they're asking questions as well. So allowing time for them. They might annoy everybody else, but you need to figure a way to build that into your presentation as well.
I learned that too when I had a workshop where I thought there was somebody, it was a small group, and I thought there was somebody who really got and enjoyed the presentation, but they didn't get an opportunity to speak, and that was their frustration, even if it was to share their opinion or their thought. And it was a big eye-opener for me around those things. It's not just what you've said, is it's not just about spurting out and speaking out, but it's bringing the audience in as well. It's such there's two sides to it, and we often don't think about bringing the audience in, just spurting out our message, don't we? That's probably a hidden trap as well.
Yeah. And even for a 20-minute presentation, sometimes you've really got to, you know, there's got to be something, some component in it that makes sure that you do exactly that. But if you look for how people learn, and if you also use the format in every presentation that you deliver, it once you know how to do it, it becomes really easy to put it together, and you can then make sure that you've included everybody, and you just do it automatically with your presentations.
So here's a question for you. If I wanted to create a presentation, how can I create a presentation in 3 hours?
Oh, that's something that I love to do, Barbara. There's three words that I use to put together a 3-hour presentation. And there's little magic words that make it really easy. They are the why, the what, and how. And if you follow that format, it's so simple. So why are the people there? Why are you putting the presentation together? So that's the first thing that you need to address right at the beginning of any delivery. Now, that can be part of your opportunity to express your expertise as well. That's where you would put that. In your why part, what outcomes they're going to have, what they're going to learn on the day. So the whole part of why I'm here. And if you do that, right at the beginning, when I teach this component, I even show photos of family, or this is part of the building the story part, is that initial connection, because that's what we want to know right from the beginning. And it's more so, you know, in 2018, that story has to come across to build that connection. So why are you here, and who are you really? So then the next part is, what are you going to teach people? What is the outcome? What is something else you need to be aware of, is who the audience is and what they expect as well, as you mentioned before. But what exactly are you going to deliver, and what the content is, who you're targeting, how you're going to do that, how you're going to structure it. And part of that then is, as we come into the how are you going to do that? How are you going to put that together? So if you go through and plan those components And then you then know you've got some really good structure on, and it's really simple, because rather than a lot of people overthink it and they're so focused on what they're going to deliver that they miss those other parts of it. And there's ways to, you know, build your what really quickly by doing post-it notes, chunking, or vision boards, or I can't think of those other things. I never use them. You know, the thing with the thing in the center and
Oh, like the mind mapping?
Mind map type of thing. Yeah, I tend to chunk with post-its. That's, people focus on the what and they spend a lot of time developing what they're going to teach them, but they miss that other part of the planning that's really is really essential component of it, because that's what builds that connection and people get to know who you are as well. Fantastic. Does that make sense? That sounds simple, or did I clarify that enough?
I think you did. I think it's we can get caught up on what we're saying, but it's more about how you're going to communicate those ideas. And like you've talked about throughout this interview, is being having that point and having that clear map of what you're communicating and thinking about your audience.
Yeah, yeah, and they are. That's really, really important, and it's what people miss, as we said right at the beginning.
Yeah. So if we look at some of the key points that you've made so many. There's so much valuable information that you've shared with us through this interview. So I'm really appreciative as well that you've done it. But what I've taken away from what you've shared is the most important aspects of a presentation or a training course or workshop is what outcome, which is what you've just talked about. What's the point that you want to achieve? That's been really strong in terms of what we've talked about.
Absolutely. That's a major takeaway point for everybody, is to make a point, and make a point with your story, make a point with what you're doing, make a point with the course. Just what are you doing to make a point? Absolutely.
The other thing that was really strong, the other key takeaway point, is that we've got to really think about our audience, not just us. We've got to think about the different learning styles. And you gave some great examples of how we can take in the needs of our audience and their learning needs, their listening needs as a speaker, so that we're addressing those needs so they can hear our message.
What's the purpose of delivering something if people are going to miss it? You know, that's sort of one of the most obvious sort of points with that, is why go to all the trouble of putting something together if you don't do it in a way that your audience hears it, sees it, feels it, understands it?
Yeah, and it's interesting too that, again, you've touched on those learning styles. It's not just hearing it, it's feeling it, touching it, almost tasting it. It's all those senses, isn't it, that you've got to think about?
Yeah.
The other thing, the other big point, the big takeaway point for me is that about the nerves, about being a novice, of being, you gave some great tips there. I love the one about the lemon. I was feeling the saliva building in my mouth just thinking about that lemon. That's a great tip. And breathing before you stand up. So there's lots of things that you can do to put yourself on the right foot. And really, it's just not about being perfect the first time round, but just getting out there and doing it, is what I took away from what you said as well.
Yeah. And look, and that's what you need to do when you first start. And then as you become more comfortable as a speaker, then getting some feedback to make sure that you're not using distracting movements. It's really funny. I'm sitting here recording that training this morning, and we're having this conversation now to our laptops, and I use hand gestures. I don't know whether you do the same, but I use hand gestures when I speak, and I'm speaking to a computer. And even with the training this morning, I'm using hand gestures, and lots of people who are quite animated do, but just making sure that you get feedback that those gestures aren't distracting from your message, and you're not using repetitive vocal statements like
I know what you're trying to say,
but you're not using things or lots of ums and ahs or something that's going to distract from your message. It doesn't matter if you do things occasionally, but the whole purpose is we don't want to distract from your message. So, yeah, so that's get the practice and then get the feedback.
I think that's a really important point about the feedback, because we're not aware of what we're doing when we're speaking and we think we're doing a good job, and it's only when you've picked up, I've seen you with other people picking up on little traits or habits or tonalities, facial expressions, and we're not aware of it. And I know when I've watched video recordings of me speaking, I'm horrified at these things that I'm doing that I'm not even aware of. So that feedback is incredibly important.
Yeah, yeah. And I make sure I get it all the time as well. Just keeps me on my toes.
So my question for you is there's so much advice there. There's so much that we can do to improve on our speaking. And there's definitely value in speaking in terms of growing our business. It's a number one opportunity for entrepreneurs and solo entrepreneurs and women moving forward, is to be able to get out there and speak. So what can people do to be able to find out about the things that you're doing that can empower them to become more powerful speakers?
Well, three times a year, I run professional speaking classes and courses. And, you know, I have beginners and I have people that have been speaking for quite a while at the same workshops. And it doesn't matter, because everyone's in there for their own benefit to raise them up from to a different level of speaker. And there are 2 days, but some people just choose to do 1 day, which is the delivery and how they go about, you know, from all those things we mentioned, from the vocal tonality, from the gestures, touching on how you put things together. But it's just that confidence factor and the your presentation on stage. The second day is how do you put that presentation together? And I actually work with people to put their presentation together so that they've got something that they can do for 20 minutes or an hour or 3 days, and they can just expand on that same presentation. So it's a really cool day. I keep numbers small, as you could imagine, because it's very, very personalized, but it's great watching these presentations develop. So the next one of that is February 16 and 17. But I do have a calendar on my website, which is speechperfect.com.au, and that calendar will list those dates. And as I said, I keep the groups till about 8 people. And the ones where we put the presentation together, I keep to about 6. And that, because I just want to offer as much value as I can to everybody in the room.
And I've definitely experienced that, where you really focus on the individual and empower them and give them opportunity. So if people want to get in contact with you, they can make bookings through your website for those events. They can look at the calendar and book a ticket. But otherwise, they can email you at JeanineVosper@speechperfect.com.au.
Yeah, it's actually got a dot in between Janine and Janine.Vosper.
Did I not say that? Sorry. I'm looking at it, but I'm not saying it.
Yeah. And look, that the email and the phone number and everything is on the website as well. So
awesome. And you hold regular mastermind groups as well, meetup groups?
Yeah, look, just to keep me busy and, you know, fill my time up a little bit more, I do run a mastermind group. And so if the listeners that are based in Logan, South Brisbane, although I've got somebody that's travelling from Caboolture to Mount Gravatt as well to attend, I do run a monthly mastermind meeting, very different than a lot of the networking meetings that are around. This one is an opportunity. I give about 20 minutes of information on a particular topic, and then we break off in small groups of 3, and everyone gets 8 minutes on their business to discuss whatever the topic was for that particular day, or just any issues that they're having. And then I work around throughout the groups and assisting people to get a little bit more clarity on what's going on. But it's become quite invaluable with the other people in the groups, because sometimes you just need someone else's ideas. When you're working by yourself all the time, trying to figure stuff out for yourself, this is why I started this particular group, is because you just need that feedback and that input. And I know so many of the ladies that I'd met around the different networking groups weren't getting that opportunity. So this is it's so much fun too. And everyone's so supportive of everyone else's business. So we keep that to about 20 people. Again, it's not a big group, but you get a lot of valuable information. That is also on the calendar as well. And look, and Barbara, I'm just starting up in February a member subscription group as well. And it's called The Power to Influence. Whether it's sales, communication, public speaking, whatever it is, there's going to be a heap of value in that particular group of people that I'll be sharing ideas, information, and bringing in guest speakers as well to share information. It's all done online, and it's really your monthly training course at a really good price. So that starts in February.
That sounds fantastic. That sounds amazing. Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited about that. It's been something I've been wanting to do for a while, and now it's all coming into fruition.
Janine, thank you for this opportunity for me to be able to learn from you. I've really enjoyed interviewing you and getting to know so much more about what you do. I've picked up some great tips. It's always good to listen to something like this because you learn something new or you revisit things you need to know. So I've really enjoyed it and would love listening to powerful women speaking in your podcast. So it's really nice to turn the microphone back on you. So thank you for sharing your expertise.
And look, I've loved being on this side as well, Barbara. It's quite different because normally I'm taking tons of notes throughout, you know, and including, you know, that as part of my questions and going off topic a little bit. And this time I have my pen and paper in here and I've got nothing written except Alice Springs. But for the listeners, Barbara is based in Alice Springs. So it's just, this is something I love about doing these too, is you get to communicate with people from wherever they are. So thank you very much for taking over that role as the host today. Really appreciate it, Barbara.
My pleasure.
And that, again, is Barbara Clifford, and Barbara is the Time Tamer. And thank you, everybody, for allowing me the opportunity today to share information on stuff I know as well. And to all the listeners for the We Are Women podcast, thank you. Thank you for subscribing. And I look forward to sharing another episode with you shortly. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.